welcome to Bagel Tech Mac, the weekly show on Macintosh from the Bagel Tech Network, where we discuss all things Apple, iOS, anything that's iDevice related, and anything that takes the fancy of us when we do feel like it. We've got our usual panel here, apart from Will Green, unfortunately. He's off getting drunk on a lad's weekend. I guess it's like a bachelor party come stag weekend or something, maybe. But he's not joining us, unfortunately. The rest are all still here as normal, and we've got a different setup on the video, so we're all on the screens rather than me being off to one side. Top left, we've got Mr. Don McAllister, who's coming via car, via Skype, via 3G connection. Hello, mate.
Yeah, hello there, Ewan. Yeah, I'm in my mobile studio with my iPhone 4, nice strong 3G signal, and my iPhone headset. I just had to nip across the Pennines to pick up my lad from university. He's off for 3 weeks now, so I'm bringing him back home. So I had to come over a bit earlier so I could take an hour out and just have a chat to you guys. But also, the technology is not letting me down. It seems to be pretty good. I can hear you fantastically.
I've got to say, mate, you sound great. I mean,
perhaps I'll do this in future.
it's not up to the studio, but it's not bad at all. You guys think so?
Yeah, it sounds good.
Yeah.
Cool.
It's chat room saying it sounds good too, so yeah.
Excellent.
Good choice. Next to him, we've got Mr. Dr. Happy Mac, Andrew Stevenson. How's it going, mate?
Yeah, not too bad. Good. Interesting week.
Markets all go well?
Yeah, very good. Very pleased with that. Been doing a bit of Mac retail experimenting with obviously can't afford a shop in the Cotswolds, which is far too expensive for my blood. So I've been experimenting with having a stall in the quite upmarket Cirencester Cornhall. Table there, secondhand Macs. People can come round, have a chat to me and, get to some advice and things, and people have been straight off the bat buying Macs off me. So yeah, I've had a good, interesting day.
Did you at least break even?
Certainly covered my costs.
You don't have to
sell too many.
No, that's
iMacs
true.
To cover the cost of a market stall, I can tell you.
So are you going back next week?
I'll be there on Monday and Wednesday next week. Yes.
I made you story one to try and help on Tuesday, but I don't know whether it did or not on the Daily Show. You were story number one.
Was I?
Yes, you were. Our very own Dr. Mac at the Cornhall in Cirencester.
Yeah.
Go along soon. Get your Mac fixed.
We missed out. We were Dom Jolly was supposed to be there, but it turned out that some enormously important, massive media contract event negotiations in London took precedence over coming down to the market on my behalf. So,
Below him, we've got Mr. Kyle Swagger, recently recovered from having had an earthquake. Well, live.
Yeah.
We saw it. The chat room saw it. The microphone was moving. The desk was moving. The camera was moving. And Kyle was moving. But you're all right now.
It's fine. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it was either a very small earthquake or a very big truck passing. But my wife says she felt it. So. It moved my fat butt, so apparently it was something.
I had to diffuse the situation rapidly. Right, the week in Apple, it's pretty thin pickings, it has to be said this week, yet again. The MacBook Air has got a projected sales per annum of 2.2 billion. I thought that would be a good one to discuss a bit later on. Did Sony CEO leak the plans for the iPhone 5 camera, perhaps? And also, iPod Nano is going to get a camera, allegedly, too, all rumour. iOS 5 is going to bring Spaces to the iPad. We're going to have a real chat about that one because I just don't get that one at all. And iPhone 4 might be gone forever in the white version. It's disappeared from the website today. So, and Best Buy got into trouble, allegedly. That's a big allegedly, though. Right, the week in technology, as far as Mac's concerned, like I said, there's not an awful lot, but the MacBook Air has supposedly got a 2.2 billion per year market. Can you really see Apple selling $2.2 billion worth of MacBook Air?
Isn't that the netbook, right?
That's the little tiny netbook, yeah. You get the 11-inch or the 13-inch.
Steve will kill me for saying that.
The 11-inch netbook. No, it is. It's accurate. It's an 11-inch netbook.
It is.
It's a Hackintosh.
Oh, it's not a Hackintosh. Good grief. Have you tried one of those things?
No, I haven't.
Anyone who's got one, but... I went to a small portable Mac, and I got one of those, I think, I can't remember, it might have been an Acer, or, I don't know, it was horrible. I had to sell it after the first week.
You sold it to me?
Did I?
Yes. That was the.
Of course.
That was the MSR Wind.
It's the one. It's a great machine. I love that machine.
I've still got it.
Well, what do you think of it?
I loved it.
Yeah.
I wonder who the loser was that bought it.
No, I bought it and it was great and I made it into a Hackintosh, and the only reason I don't still use it is because of the fact none of the audio drivers were in it.
That's right. Well, that was one of the problems, because it was sort of like not quite a Mac. It was nearly there but not quite, because, you know, certain things didn't work properly. And like the keyboard, I didn't like the keyboard at all, and it just looked so cramped on the screen because it was a very low res screen as well. Yeah, no, I couldn't go with it. I thought it would really fit in with what I wanted to do, you know, to use the Mac in front of the TV and stuff, but it just didn't work for me. So I'm glad it went to a good home there.
Yeah, no, it still works. It's still fine, and it's still got Macintosh on it. It's still got the Mac OS on it. But
And I did sell you for the price I bought it as well, so I didn't rip you off.
That's right, you did. It sold me the exact same money. And it was a piece of cake to set up as well, because I had a problem with it, and I had to wipe it all and start again. And setting it up was dead easy. I've also got a Dell 9 Mini that at the moment's got Windows on it because it ran the Skywall, and that was only because the drivers just weren't there for the audio systems. If that had been there, I think the Hackintosh would have absolutely crushed an awful lot of the competition. I think it would be taken away definitely from the MacBook Air sales at the moment.
See, I got one of the original MacBook Airs when they first came out, and although it was a beautiful form factor, it did struggle with just a single, you know, USB port, which was a bit silly. But also, it was dramatically underpowered as well. So whilst it was great for sort of like, you know, just doing basic tasks, you couldn't really use it for anything serious, really. So I actually ended up moving to a MacBook Pro after the original MacBook Air. But when the new MacBook Airs came out, I decided to give another go. So I did actually get one of the 13-inch MacBook Airs, one of the new generation.
And? Happy?
It's fantastic. It's probably the best laptop I've actually had. I mean, it's the same form factor. You've now got I know it sounds daft, but the additional USB drive, because it's got two USB ports rather, it does make a difference, although I would still like to see it with a proper Ethernet, a gigabit Ethernet port. But it's just so fast. Even though it's got a slightly slower processor than you might get with a normal MacBook Pro or MacBook even, the addition of the solid state memory just makes it fly. It's an amazing machine.
So what kept you away from the 11-inch?
I think it might have even been my experiences with the Hackintosh, you know, with the relatively size. Small screen.
Yeah.
Because one of the things that swung me to get the MacBook Air was that the resolution. See, I had a 15-inch MacBook Pro, and the screen resolution of the 13-inch MacBook Air, the new one, is the same as the 15-inch MacBook Pro.
Right.
So I thought, well, you know, I didn't really want to sacrifice screen real estate, because I like as sort of, you know, as much stuff on the screen as I can. So I ended up going with the 13. Saying that, though, because I've done a lot of traveling recently, I think the 11-inch would have been better for the traveling I've been doing, because there's been a couple of times when I wanted to work, you know, especially if you're on a plane. The 13-inch, although it's a lot more portable, it's still, because I only do travel in coach, you know, I don't do this business class thing. The 11-inch is perfect for coach, and I was envious of a couple of people that I saw going over to, it was probably, I can't remember where it was, but, you know, they were actually working on the plane because they could open their lid properly with their 11-inch MacBook Air, and I was struggling with my 13, so I just had to watch movies on the iPad. So if I was doing more traveling, I'd probably go for the 11, but no, I'm perfectly happy with the 13-inch for now.
So do we think that the other two guys particularly here, you know, who's buying this? Because I haven't bought a MacBook Air. I didn't buy the first gen and I didn't buy the second one. And I did have a play with the Hackintosh, but for the kind of the similar reasons that Don said there, you know, it's just a small factor. I got big pork sausages for fingers as well. And it was great for just picking up an email, but then it was bloody useless for anything else because of the underpoweredness of it and the lack of the drivers and so on. Who's buying the current MacBook Airs?
Well, you've got a nice keyboard on the Air. It's the same full-size chiclet keyboard, isn't it?
Yeah.
Good old board. And I must say that I kind of agree with Don. It's difficult to describe, really, how much I hate the original Air. It is every time a customer comes into the office and they open their backpack and they pull out an Air and they go, it's broken. It's like conflicting emotion. One half of me is like, oh God, I've got to fix a bloody MacBook Air. And the other half is like, hooray, it might be unfixable. Another one gone. They're so foul to work. Everything's a pain in the arse. Everything's difficult. There's no easy way to do anything on it. Oh,
are they pretty bad for failure rates as well?
Yeah, but I mean, having said, I've had a good go on the 11-inch, and the screen's pretty impressive on that. I mean, the resolution's not that far off the 13-inch screen.
Oh, right.
And with the SSDs, it's really quite swift. It's going to be a pain in the ass to work on, and I will grow to hate it. But
well, I've seen SSDs working briefly, and they've been mostly the 64 gig bit range when, you know, things like in like the Dell 9 Mini that I've got. And they're swift. They're great. They're really, really good. But we were with Mark Sunner the other week, if you remember, Andy, and he started up Photoshop from SSD in his iMac. Good God. It was half a second to launch Photoshop off the SSD. I mean, it was...
PS5, which is a toggle in the box either.
No, and it's not worth the £1,000 or whatever perhaps it would have cost, but I was seriously, seriously impressed with that. So, yeah. You know, the 64 gig SSD 11-inch, there's a certain appeal to it.
Yeah, I mean, I've used his, and it's definitely doesn't feel like the board slug that the original one was.
Yeah, I've often thought, if you have an iPad, what's the iPad for? If you have a MacBook Air, what's the MacBook Air for? And Don has both, and I'm kind of curious with Don, which one do you use more? Do you use the iPad more, or do you use the MacBook Air more?
That's a great question. I tend to use the iPad when I've stopped working, basically. So, you know, if I've, although when I say I've stopped working, when I've moved away from a desk and I'm sort of, you know, sitting in the lounge watching TV or something, invariably now I watch TV with one eye on the TV and one eye on my iPad and sort of do various things using the iPad. But if I do want to do some serious work, which involves lots of multitasking or lots of switching from one screen to another, I'll then get the MacBook Air and use that to do any serious work. So it's very much, although, you know, the iPad isn't just for consumption, I have to say that's the mode I probably tend to use it in most, you know, actually accessing Twitter, reading RSS feeds, reading books, watching videos, stuff like that, you know, consuming media. And then the MacBook Air is definitely when I want to do some serious work, which involves sort of rapidly switching between windows or doing lots of copying and pasting between windows. For me, especially sort of using keyboard shortcuts for accessing mail, you know, a lot of the things that I do is connected with sort of looking at mail and answering mail, and I use Mail Act on. I have key sets set up to do various things, and, you know, although it's fairly easy to file mails and stuff and answer short mails on the iPad, if I'm in a serious mail answering mode, I'll nearly always go to the MacBook Air and use Mail Act on to actually, you know, speed that process up.
So really, the MacBook Air it's more of a replacement for the MacBook Pro or a MacBook rather than the iPad.
Definitely, yeah, because the iPad still has its use. You know, it's even though the MacBook Air is light and even though it's very portable and even though you have the real keyboard, you know, sometimes you want that keyboard to get out of the way, and you know, the screen resolution on the iPad's fantastic. It's a really nice reading device, so, you know, they definitely have the roles, you know, distinct roles that I use them for anyway. I think the master show that what Apple did, though, and the reason why they've sold so many is, yeah, it's a fast machine, and anyone who picks one up will actually love the machine because it is very fast. But I think they've priced it just right. The original MacBook Air was really a luxury item. It was really expensive, and you didn't really get that much for your bang for your buck, basically. But with the MacBook Air, they've brought the prices down to make it affordable. Although, again, it's still, you know, an all Apple kit is premium kit because you pay a price for the build quality, etc. But I do think they've priced it so that it's a lot more affordable than the original machines were, and I think that's a big factor of people saying, well, you know, actually I could stretch to that to get one of these laptops. And I hear lots of people using it as their primary primary workstation, you know, hooking up to a big monitor when they get back and using it as a primary machine. It's certainly that fast enough.
If you're using it for low-powered apps, you know, you're not trying to do, you know, Final Cut with it, or...
Well, you know, I have edited a project in Final Cut Pro on it, and it worked fine. Because the thing is with Final Cut Pro, as long as you're using the correct source material and it's rendered properly, the editing process isn't that processor intensive. The processor intensive bit is when you've finished and you need to encode it to a final format. Now, that's when it really struggles. That's when, you know, you haven't got the processing power to crunch the numbers. But to actually use the Final Cut application itself, it's fine. It actually does work.
Oh, that's good. And now I've got
interesting to hear, actually.
I've got the little tiny keyboard folder with the iPad keyboard in it, the Bluetooth one, and I use that quite a lot, and I don't have much of a problem with it. And I do email on it, and I'll even do quite heavy email with that, and not do too badly. It's not perfect, but it's you know, it's good enough. It does all right. It's not a million miles off the same size as the keyboard and stuff. It's just a little bit better than the on-screen keyboard for iPad. iPad iOS 5 may bring spaces to the iPad. Now, I mean, I've got to say, I was really perplexed by this story because I just don't see spaces as being that good an experience, even on the OS X platform, rather than trying to shove it into iOS. Agreed? Disagreed? Is that
agreed? I never use it on the Mac. Never use it.
So why would they want to stick? Do you think this is just one of those patents that they filed just so that they can say that they filed it and make sure that there's a closed loop on the Spaces patent as a whole?
Or no, I think they're just doing it because they can, or maybe some people like that. I mean, I know people that use Spaces and it is quite effective for them. Me personally, though, I've just never used it. I like my environment the way it is. When I open it up there, that's fine. Everything I know is where it's at. And I don't know. I've always found Spaces to be spacey.
Yeah, it's one of those. I mean, I've got clients that really, really love it, and they tend to be the very, very orderly. If you're a really orderly and organized person and you structure your working environment quite happily, then I've got a lot of clients that really like Spaces and they appreciate it, and they like to be able to focus on one thing or another. But then I would say that a bigger majority of my clients just, you know, and myself, I'm probably the antithesis, the opposite of organized, and I don't use it.
That would be messy.
I can't even see the metaphor on the iPad. I can see the metaphor and I can see why it would work on the desktop. I'm struggling to see why on the iPad.
Yeah, see, I've tried to use Spaces a couple of times on the Mac, and it's never really given me any benefits, to be honest. I find myself spending more time fighting against it than it actually helping me, because, you know, you forget where things are, or you forget the keyboard shortcuts to jump to things quickly, or you open a space and then suddenly all your windows gone and the one that you wanted to stay on that particular space is so, yeah, I've tried several times and it just doesn't help me. But however, on the iPad, I do think the patent is just, I don't think they'll introduce it as a separate piece of technology, but what I think that is already there, in fact, you know, anyone can do it now, even with 4.3, is if you install the developer tools on your Mac and then switch on the 4 and 5 finger gestures on your iPad, in effect you get Spaces, because you can actually use a 4 finger swipe left and right to move between applications. And in some respects, that's pretty much all you get with Spaces anyway. It's just it's in a vertical a vertical presentation rather than a grid. So, you know, if you've got 3 or 4 applications open, if you swipe with 4 fingers, you'll actually just move on to the next application. And it's as though you're changing Spaces and you see the application full screen in that particular mode. So I don't, unless they rebrand that, because it's still not an official feature, unless they rebrand that feature as Spaces, don't know, but you can do it now if you just spend £6 or something. Or no, it's about £3, isn't it, to download the developer tools from the Mac App Store.
See, the only thing that struck me about this was the Spaces always struck me as being modal. So you have a productivity mode, you'll have a photo editing mode, you'll have a music editing mode and music playing mode, and you create the screens based on the mode that you're in. I want to do productivity, I want to do music, I want to do, and you'd separate it that way. I never thought you'd put individual applications on individual spaces anyway. But with the iPad, what I think is quite interesting is the fact that everything runs full screen anyway. So there's a certain element of why do you need Spaces when you've got the double tap on the home button to then start your next application from the little strip that runs very easily across the bottom. And the only other thing I thought that it would give an extra benefit to is if you stopped running apps in full screen and started running them in Windows. Do we ever see that the iPad is going to then start running in Windows?
No, that's never going to happen.
It's always going to be full screen. I mean Windows as in like boundary boxes, not...
Yeah. No, Lion's going the other way, so that, you know, Lion will support full screen applications, and again you'll get this swiping of full screen applications in Lion as well as you do in the iPad. So I can't see them going the other way on the iPad.
No. Anyone else?
I'd, I don't know. It's funny you bring it up. I kind of tend to agree with Don there. And then another part of me says, would that be nice to be able to have live environments that just spreads out on your iPads? Oh, I want that. I want that. Instead of, you know, instead of using that button at the bottom, to be honest with you, ever since I upgraded to iPhone 4, you sit there, tap, 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 tap on that button. I'm always afraid I'm going to wear the thing out. It would be nice if we had some other way that's just like, you know, you do some gestures with the hands on the screen.
Like an expose.
It brings up this environment. This, oh, I've got this open. I've got that open. I've got that open. That I could, I kind of agree with Don, but I almost think I would kind of like it.
Yeah, actually, you raise a good point though, because I think where I could see spaces going, I think that's what you're intimating about is to have, say, see a grid of all your running applications on your iPad, and perhaps even see a thumbnail of the documents you're working on or the application, and then choose from a grid rather than having the swiping across the multitasking bar at the bottom. I think that part of spaces, you know, because on spaces on the Mac, you can get a representation of all your spaces and what's contained within the spaces. I think that might be a possibility, and that's something that I would like to see as well.
I mean, I'm a big expose lover. You know, I regularly got lots and lots of windows open doing the show. I've got audio running in one. I've got stories running in another. I've got Ustream running in the third one. And I use expose to pull it open and click regularly with both hands. So something like that on the Mac, but that suddenly takes the Mac then really into the computing line rather than being a personal tablet. It then does start to really become a functional multitasking computer, surely.
Well, it does have a dual-core processor now.
Exactly. Mm. Which is going to give it the graphical capability to be able to deal with something like expose. Mm. Yeah, four-finger swipe.
The future could be bright. It could be so bright.
It could be so bright. Allegedly, FaceTime has been taking pictures of users without them knowing.
Hopefully not in my underwear.
Well, apparently this thing's not just kind of like, you know, you take a you record yourself and it takes a still image while you're recording yourself. There's people that have got pictures of themselves at work and they've never used FaceTime at work. And they don't know how. One guy's been quoted here that FaceTime's taken a picture of their boyfriend at work, displayed on the FaceTime, even though he swears blind, he's never used it in the office. There's a bit of kind of like, well, yeah, he says that, but there's a video of it being done as well on CNET of this thing taking pictures inappropriately. Is this just a glitch? Surely.
Yeah, I think we would have heard of it by now, wouldn't we? I don't think it's...
The last thing Apple needs is another Pennsylvania school case, isn't it?
It's Big Brother. It's Big Brother himself. What do you think? This is why Steve's at home. He's watching all of us.
Is it like one of those... Has he got one of those Batman monitors that's got all the pictures of everybody around the whole city and all over the world taking...
My dude, did you see the... There was a story in the press this week about a guy who stole a laptop, a MacBook, and actually recorded himself... yeah, it's actually dancing in front of the camera, dancing to a music track, pretty naffly, I have to say. But apparently, the guy who had it stolen could still access the machine, and he could actually get to watch the video. So he downloaded the video. In fact, what was it? I think it was the machine was still being backed up to a cloud based service,
right?
Because he was using Blackblaze or Mozy or something, and he could still access that, so he was able to get in and see the caches and actually download the video of the guy dancing, so he posted it on the internet.
Just to get
some sort of retribution,
back.
And probably before passing it over to the police, you know, he's like, look at this stupid idiot.
He doesn't care whether he got it back or not, just as long as he got the retribution.
That was his payback.
Apple has ordered 12 petabytes of storage. That's an awful lot of stuff, isn't it?
Well, it's 12,000 1 terabyte hard drives, so it doesn't. And
oh, it's not that
thinking,
much.
Oh, that's like 12 petabytes. That's a lot. But then I'm thinking, well, 12,000 1 terabyte hard drives for a company Apple size, maybe it's not so much.
They're going to use it for iTunes storage for video downloads.
But it is a lot of video, I would guess. Yeah,
it's a fair old bit of video. Yeah. In terms of YouTube, that's a drop in the ocean, I would have thought, isn't it?
What, as to what the size of YouTube is?
Yeah, I mean, YouTube's doing something like 2 billion views a day or something, isn't it? Or an hour, or something really stupid. Mm. Both of those statistics are stupid and completely made up off the top of my head. But but no, it is. It's doing something like 2 billion a day.
It is. It's something like that.
Yeah, and the uploads are 1 billion a day or something. You know, they're phenomenal numbers. And at that kind of level, it's absolutely nothing in comparison.
Maybe it's we're heading towards La La Man. This is La La Land.
You think? Well, we said last week, you know, Apple have bought La La, sat on it, done absolutely sod all with it, other than crushed it in effect, unless they're all in the basement working hard, chained up somewhere, or got Iron Maidens, you know, clinging onto them with only their hands available for coding. Is this the release where they're going to start looking at challenging Amazon with the cloud-based thing?
Well, I said last week they have to, and I think they will. This is right up Apple's alley to be able to deliver content. It's what they do best. iTunes proves that. And I really am hoping. I seen the rumor last year, and I keep emphasizing, and I think it is the way to go, that when we buy stuff on iTunes, we have the ability not only to own it on our hard drive, to have the backup copy in the cloud, but also to stream it. And that, from what I heard last year, that is the way it's going to be. And when Apple finally gets this whole thing going, that's how it's going to be addressed to us, at no additional cost, is also what I heard.
Allegedly.
I got the same place where you got your facts a while ago.
So do we see that it actually is going to be a viable option for them, or are they still just going to play around with it? They've got to.
It is the future. I mean, we used to be like, CD, rip it to iTunes. You know, you go back through YouTube, see the old videos of Steve. He's throwing in a CD. Wow, look what you could do. You could put your CD on your hard drive, right, and through iTunes. Well, that's great. And then we moved on. Now we've got the iTunes store, and you can get all the music that you've ever wanted to hear. Now we're at the time where I don't want to download it anymore. I just want it to be there. I just want to stream it. And Apple knows that, and that's what the consumer pulse is right now. Pandora proves that. Spotify proves that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, it's got to happen. The thing is, though, with Apple is they'll do it their own when they want to and when they're ready, I think. But I'm wondering if the Amazon thing has not so much forced the hand, but sort of set a precedent, because I'm sure one of the problems that Apple have probably had is getting the agreement of the music companies, you know, behind them to do this. And I think Amazon didn't even bother asking, they just did it. So whether or not that sets a precedent that, you know, Apple can stop worrying too much about the relationships with the music industry, although they probably can't because they're so heavily tied into the iTunes store. But, you know, it's certainly an interesting development in the way that Amazon just bulldozed it through and said, I think, you know, they probably evaluated it and said, look, you know, they think they have a strong legal case, and let's just go and do it, and we'll just sort out the mess afterwards. And Apple probably have been a little bit more cautious and have been sounding out industry people, but hopefully this has set a precedent, and we should see something soon.
Do you think that Amazon's cloud is actually perhaps even a carbon copy of what Apple had intended as well? So, you know, it's all come out now, and Apple are going to go, oh, that's what we were going to do, and we can't come out with exactly the same thing. We've got to think of something different, because there's an awful lot of Amazon thing that looked logical, didn't it?
Yeah, it's what they can do that really different, isn't it? I mean, it's cloud storage. I mean, there's not a lot you can do with that other than, you know, give you a place
on the accessibility, though, isn't
stuff.
It?
Perhaps automate stuff a bit better, or
the front end.
Say again?
It's the accessibility of it, though. It's the front end of it.
Yeah.
The data switching element that's going to be this thing that sets them apart. Mm-hmm. And that's where Apple want to look good as well, I presume. Because they've always had this...
Where they've never really... They've never looked good in that space. I mean, great, I'm looking forward to it, but I mean, to be honest, you know, Apple's history of cloud services is not a good history. It'd be nice if they could get it right.
Mm.
And you know, they do have this, you know, this aura of Apple. We do stuff right. We do stuff, you know, and when we do it, it's slick. And you know, the hardware is certainly slick, and a lot of the OS is slick. But Apple's cloud history is not slick, not slick at all.
No. Not at all. Last story then. The Zoom tablet is projected to sell a total of 100,000 units. It's one third of the day one sales of iPad 1. And we're all laughing, but I think this is a devastating blow to the tablet market because it sets the iPad so far ahead.
We need to concentrate on the positive. That they can take away from this. And was it 1,000, no, 100,000 sales of the Zoom? And I think that...
Not even yet. That's projected.
They can look at that.
They're hoping.
We have absolutely mullered the 503 kins that Microsoft sold.
Absolutely, that's true. Fair point.
I think maybe if they were going for the biggest tech fail in history, they haven't managed it.
Oh, poor old... They haven't managed the biggest and they haven't managed the worst. Mediocrity. No, I mean, the Zoom... Because everyone critically said the Zoom was actually a good experience. It wasn't like the Galaxy Tab. It actually worked and it was decent to look at and play with. And the fact... You know, who's going to keep Apple honest now?
We are.
No, we're not, because we're all buying iPads. That's the point.
Well, it's because iPad is the one that's still doing it right. You know, I haven't played with the Zoom, so I'll say that. But when I seen the thing, you know, when we seen the videos at CES and it was tablet heaven, it was the best one to come out of there. And I still think it's one of the best tablets that's out there on the market.
That's what a lot of people
are
saying.
However, it's out of the price range.
Yeah,
that's the point. Anything you go, you sit there and you look. Well, geez, I want an iPad. It's a status symbol. I know it works. I know it's supported. Every mother's son has one. I'm going to get that. Plus, it's cheaper. So why get a Zoom? They haven't made the average consumer take a look or a second look and go, same price, more features. I think I'll go there.
I mean, Don, you're an Apple fanboy the same as the rest of us, to even maybe a bigger extent. You've got more hardware than we have. But is there a bit of you that still looks at the tablet market and goes, someone has to do something, because otherwise we cannot have the iPad 2 just running, or iPad in general as a brand name, running over everything?
Yeah, it's a difficult situation because you do need competition. You know, Apple, I mean, they're only human. They will get complacent, they will start to rest on their laurels. Hopefully they won't, but you know, it's human nature to if you've got no competition, you don't really push yourself forward. But it's really difficult for, I mean, I feel so sorry for these other sort of competitors. You know, how do they actually come up against the iPad? I mean, they can't do it on spec, and I think the Zoom just shows that. You know, it's a fantastically spec'd machine, but the infrastructure is not there and the applications aren't there. I think there was a web article about it showed a screenshot of the Zoom and some featured applications, and there were like three applications on the screen. You know, there were only three applications that were deemed worthy enough to be sort of featured. So they've got such a huge mountain to climb to try and catch up to what the iPad is already, and it's still just over a year old, and it's got such a foothold in the market. And the thing, another thing I read over the week, someone did that, ran the numbers, and they worked out that Apple would in fact make more money on the smart covers than Motorola will actually make on the, you know, on the Zoom. In fact, they make more profit on the smart covers than the revenue generated by the Zoom.
Yeah. I hadn't read that, but that's the figures seem to add up there, doesn't it?
Well, yeah.
Well, see, that could mean two things, though. A, look, that's embarrassing for Motorola. Two, we're obviously we're overpaying for those damn smart covers.
The smart cover's got more computing power.
Oh dear! But it is a real problem, though, because you know you do want a decent competitor, and because that's the way that it keeps Apple's on the toes. But at the moment, they're just killing it.
They are. It's bad and bad times.
I wonder what's going to happen with the Playbook. When's the Playbook coming out? Because that's the next
April
iPad
12th.
Killer, isn't it?
Yeah, the 12th, 19th. So it's in the next 4 to 11 days. The Playbook.
And that's going to be fascinating to see. You know what happens with that.
But I think the
Playbook, it's delayed.
You've got a delay on that date.
I've heard it's delayed because of Flash.
Flash as in Flash memory, or Flash as in Flash?
No, as in Flash.
Program.
As in the platform Flash. Probably the damn chipmunks again.
Well, this network's not in love with Flash at the minute.
No, we're not.
Chipmunks ruined the Playbook. There we go. Title for the day.
I also read that they were having problems sourcing the panels as well, because Apple have pretty much sewn up the market for the touchscreen panels, which was delaying it by... I wasn't sure when that delay was, though, whether or not they'd already... You know, sort of.
They bought up as many touch panels as there are in the world as well, or something, so for iPad 2 manufacture. Andy, you were going to say something there?
I was going to say, the only interesting bit with the Playbook that I can see in terms of the market is there's a different dynamic coming along there that... You know, with the iPad, it's a consumer purchase. You go out, you buy your own iPad, you buy your own Galaxy Tab, you buy your own Motorola Zoom. and you love it or not and things. But I mean, this is the first competitor that's come along where there's another push into the market, which is I would imagine there's going to be a lot of people out there on the road, salesmen and people like that, that are going to be given a playbook because it's from BlackBerry and their company is already
compatibility and enterprise
in BlackBerry. And I think that, you know, that's going to be interesting whether some different sort of marketing push can leverage the playbook into the space where it might otherwise fail.
There's a couple of comments in the chat room here. Sarah's saying, I find it amazing that no one's come out with a credible alternative, to which I've just replied, well, the Zoom was heralded as credible. The problem was just nobody bought it. And MacBits is saying, competitors seem to try and compete on specs rather than infrastructure and overall user experience, which is a great point.
Completely. Yeah,
absolutely right.
I agree with that.
Yeah.
There was a nice lady on the stall next to mine on Monday, and she had bought a Galaxy Tab. And we were sat there, and Mark Sunner came along, and we're an iPad user, and I've got, you know, we've all got an iPad, and it's an Apple stand. And she put and said, "Oh, I've got my tablet, I've got this." And we looked at the Galaxy Tab, and we fiddled it, and we tried to help her set some stuff up. She couldn't set up on it, and we said, "Oh, how do you find it? Do you like it? Do you love it? Is it great?" And she's like, "Well, it's all right. It's nothing. You know, I don't feel anything about it." And I don't think there's anyone that feels nothing about their iPad. I think it, you know.
I think the thing I had 2 hours with the Galaxy Tab 7-inch, and one of the things that really struck me was when you took hold of something and moved it, it didn't feel like it was connected to your finger. Whereas with iPad, it's like it's right there. You know, you turn the page is turning with your finger. You play shuffleboard, and the puck on the shuffleboard is attached to your finger until you let go of the screen. And that's where the Galaxy Tab really fell down. It just didn't feel like it was bothered about me. It wasn't connected to me at all.
John is testing missiles.
It's really hot. I've got the windows wound down. That was a car going past, so it wasn't a missile.
We're going to RIP the white iPhone then.
The white iPhone is dead and gone, allegedly, isn't it? It's disappeared off the website. But I spoke to Paul King, who's an electronics engineer who helps out on the network periodically. And he was telling me that he reckoned that the real issue associated with that was they were having problems with the fixer because of the heat generation. And they weren't getting it to test so it wouldn't turn yellow. That's what his theory was on it. But we'll have to see.
You have to be careful mentioning it because now it's gone from the actual Apple website, they probably will be tracking down everyone that's mentioned the white iPhone and deleting them as well.
Oh dear, they'll be rubbed out soon.
Yeah, they probably want to make sure that it's like it never even existed. So if you look over your shoulder on the way home, it'll be like that. What's the film where the guy, is it the nuclear film where he's driving? No, Jane Fonda, isn't it? And she's had the killer in the
China
car.
Syndrome. No,
China Syndrome. That's it. That'll be Don on the way home.
There's a point in the chat room here. Has Don driven to Libya? Yeah, that's $500,000 just flew past his head. Right. Have we got any cool thingies? Don, would you like to start us off? You got the worst job of the day trying to come up with a cool thingy in the middle of a lay-by.
No, that's okay. I suddenly remembered when I came on the call, thought, I'll have to think of a cool thingy. And I actually saw one. It's one that I have very little experience with because I only actually installed it last night. But my preliminary testing shows it's fantastic. It's a thing called Witness. It's a Mac app. Basically, what it does is it turns your Mac into a home security system. It uses your... We were talking about the camera taking photos before. But basically, what it does is you can... It's a web service and it's also an application. So you download the application, you create this account. I think it was about £23, so it's not cheap. But you create your account, and then once the machine is connected, it uses the a camera connected to your machine, and you can lock it. So once the machine is locked, if it senses any movement in the room, it will send an alert to your iPhone. You can download a free iPhone app, and it will also take pictures and video as well, so that you can, if you're worried about your Mac, you can set the alarm, switch it, lock it, and then if there's any movement in the room, it will notify you and it will send you a picture, and you can go onto the website and have a look at the pictures, see who's messing about with your Mac. Yeah. And I thought it was really cool. You can also, as well, if you forget to switch on the alarm before you leave the house, you can actually switch on the alarm remotely from your iPhone app or your iPad app. so that it's sort of, you know, protects it. And because the photos are uploaded to the cloud, you know, even if someone pinches your Mac, you can still get access to those photos and see what's what. But hopefully it wouldn't come to that, because you'd have a, you'd be able to act on it straight away.
Very good. It's at gadgetlight.com. Witness for Mac. Very, very good. Steve in the chat room said, Don McAllister, part-time podcaster, part-time F-16 pilot.
Sitting here trying to stop myself from laughing.
On that note, Andrew, do you have one for us?
Two, again.
Two, you greedy git, go on.
Yeah, one is completely un-Mac related, but I'm definitely saving my pennies for that. And it's, you did, we, it's been on Twitter and it's brilliant. It's the return of the Commodore 64.
Yes, that was the C64 has been reissued, hasn't it? And the old one has been reissued with a new skin as well.
Yeah, do one. Yes, with a lovely Commodore 64 and its 80s glorious plasticness with the clicky keyboard and a proper Intel Core 2 Duo processor inside it.
Yes. Very good. And there's a new looking version as well, though, isn't there? It's just a keyboard.
Yeah, who wants that? We want the...
No, you want the old one.
We want the old one, definitely. But if you don't want a Commodore 64 and you do want a tip and a cool thingy that is Mac related, then I'm going to go for... it's a quite a well-known app, and I'm surprised it hasn't come up before yet, and I use it on an almost daily basis, which is the strangely named Super Duper.
Right, yes, from shirtpocket.com.
That's them. That's the chaps. That is, I mean, talk about making it easy to make a bootable backup from you. Just plug the drive in, launch Super Duper, click copy this to this, go.
Done.
Go make a cup of coffee, unplug drive, have bootable backup of your hard drive. That's the free version, which is great. But for only about £14, you can pay, and then it opens up the scheduling options where you can schedule it to, you know, plug your drive in and schedule it to back up your hard drive every night at 2 o'clock in the morning. It's brilliant. It's just
$28 if you want to do that option, yeah, which is really, really good.
Yeah, it's just one of those things. It does one thing and it does it better than you could imagine it being done. And if you can have it for free and do it manually, do it, but really automate yourself. If backup isn't backup until it's automated, and for £14, just buy it, plug it in and back up.
Yes, absolutely. Kyle, do you have a cool thingy for us?
I do. I've used this so many times in the past. It is well known. It's two words stuck together. It's called Handbrake. I used it this week, and I love Handbrake.
New version as well. 64-bit mode runs absolutely swimmingly. Mm. Looks stunning if you boot it up in 64. Yeah, very good.
Yes, it does. So make sure all you boys and girls out there take your legal DVDs and Handbrake them.
Which is still illegal, but never mind. The thing is, as well, with the 64-bit version, install the 64-bit version, and it doesn't matter if you're booted up in 32-bit, it will still run the 64-bit version. It doesn't run it so fast, but you don't have a problem with... you used to get an issue where if you tried to run the 64-bit version, it would say, no, you're in 32-bit mode, you can't, and you'd have to restart. Well, it doesn't do that anymore now. It just runs it in 32-bit if you're in 32-bit mode, which is useful.
It's fully multiprocessor aware as well. It runs sweet as a nut on my Mac Pro. It's great. Uses all the cores and it's just powers through encoding. It's brilliant.
Yeah, very, very good. Good pick, mate. Handbrake, and it's free.
The one thing I wish it did. I don't know if you. Maybe I'm not. I'm missing it. And if you're power users, does it have like a watched folder that you can just dump stuff into? Because it's sort of like adding to the queue all the time. It's really tedious. But
yeah, well, it's funny you should mention that. It doesn't have it built in. It does two things. Well, the only batch support it's got is that you can point at a folder and it will sort of make a list of all the media files that are in there. But then you have to go and add them manually to the queue. So it really doesn't give you any benefit. But you can use AppleScript. In fact, a couple of shows ago, I did a whole section about using AppleScript with Handbrake. And what you can do is you can create I'll have to dig out the links when I get back, but you can create this Apple script and you can turn it into a folder action that if you then place media into the folder, the folder action kicks off and it launches the Apple script and it spits out a file that's been encoded by Handbrake at the end of it. So that works really well. So I'm using that in conjunction with iFlix to put stuff into my iTunes. So Handbrake it automatically. Just drop a file into a folder. It will Handbrake it, copy it across to iFlix, and iFlix just adds the metadata and pops it into iTunes for me. Works really nicely.
Sweet.
Very sweet, good. Don. Like that
I didn't
one.
I know that.
That's a good pick as well, then.
Yes, it is.
The pick that I've got is going to come after I've done Kyle's. Sorry, dude. No, you've done yours. You've done yours. That's, right, it's okay. You Handbrake.
Handbrake.
I forgot. I lost for a minute.
Oh, God.
I got this horrible thought. Oh, God, I've missed Kyle out. But then you were Handbrake. That's right.
You're just channeling Will right now.
Let me edit this.
No, I'll keep it in.
Leave it in.
Beautiful. My pick is courtesy of Kyle, because he found it for me. I've had no end of bloody trouble the last 2 weeks thanks to an update in Flash. And what's happened is the update in Flash has corrupted, along with the upgrade to 10.6.7, because M Audio have not bothered to update their driver for the audio file second sound card that I use to power the Skype wall behind me. So I've been getting Chipmunk Audio in everything that uses Flash as a result. I've tried installing and reinstalling Flash, and it's been horrible. What I have found, though, today is that if you just take the new Flash off and put the old Flash back on, it all works just fine, even though Flash isn't the necessary evil as I thought at first. And Kyle found a website for me called mac.oldapps.com, and if you go to flashplayer.php on there, it's got the last 8 versions of Flash Player that have come out. So you've got Flash Player 2 all the way up to Flash Player 10. Now, I thought that was going to be good enough. I'll just get 10 and download it. But when I downloaded 10, what actually happens is you get a zip file that when it expands, it gives you every subversion of 10 with every file for every player. So it's actually rather large. It's 188 meg for the version 10 stuff. But everything you could possibly want in there, all the XE files, all the TGZ files, and all the DMG files to put the right version of Flash back on. Reinstalled it from that, and everything's run smooth as silk. It just took about 15 minutes away from recording the photo show this morning. So that's my pick. And they do a whole load of old Mac apps as well as, so there's tons of other stuff there to have a play with. And it's a community kind of website with people uploading stuff. There's music and video, Office, all kinds of stuff. Give it a go. Mac.oldapps.com. Right. Last word goes to our sponsors, of course. They are UK2.net, and they've been looking after us rather well, because after Mr. Anatko came on the show last week, the servers kind of went a bit ballistic. We did last month, we did 1.2 terabytes. So far this month, we've done 1.4.
Incoming!
And I missed how many terabytes you did there, because I couldn't hear it, because the Skype signal goes off and the car goes past.
We did 1.2 last month, and we've done 1.4 so far this month.
Oh, right.
So we had 26,000 downloads of the podcast in 12 hours. And that speaks volumes, because UK2 handled it all. Our server didn't fall over. There was no crashes. There was no problems. It took that kind of data load in its step, which is brilliant. They've also got a great offer for us at the moment. They've got two great offers on, actually. If you want to use their co-location services, if you then go to our website and use the click through and then search for their co-location services and sign up for them, you're going to get a free iPad 2 with that and one free month of co-location services as well. And there's no offer code in that one, you just have to go and get it. The other one is, if you go through our link and then you buy a VPS server from them, what they'll give you is 1 month free on the VPS server, providing you use the code VPS Bagel when you buy it. That's the coupon code, and that'll get you 1 month free of that VPS service. So thanks to UK2, they've made an enormous difference to this net. We could not have handled last week if it hadn't been for them. Most weeks we couldn't handle, because, you know, the Mac show at the moment is averaging 7,000 downloads per episode. So thanks to everyone who's downloading it as well, and thanks to everyone who's coming on it: Don, Will, Andy and Kyle and Andrew in Atco, because they really have made a huge difference, and we're sailing high. Thank you very much. We were number one last weekend for a while, which was nice. Where can we get a hold of you, Don?
I'm sitting in a road in Sheffield at the moment. And, oh, no, on the internet. Hang on a minute. That's screencastonline.com or my blog at themaxscreencastguy.com or on Twitter as Don McAllister.
There's a suggestion in the chat room that your new nickname is Bomber. You are now going to be henceforth referred to as Bomber McAllister.
Well, that's strange because I actually drove through over the Snake Pass, and it actually takes you through the Lady Bower Reservoir, where they actually used to do the bomb runs for the Lancaster Bombers for the bouncing bomb thing. So Bomber's quite appropriate for today.
Right, there we go. So you're now, I'm going to change your lower third on the video to Bomber McAllister. Mr. Stevenson, where can we get hold of you?
You can get hold of me on Twitter at Dr. Happy Mac, Dr. Happy Mac. You can go to www.drhappymac, full spelling, drhappymac.co.uk. You can always come to the market again. That was good. nobody followed me on Ping after my triumphant refusal to give any sensible contact details last week. So, sod yeah, I'm not doing Ping anymore.
Okay.
Social failure.
Well, it's all right. You're in good company because no one else is doing Ping either.
No.
And last but by no means least, Mr. Swagger, where can we get hold of you?
You can find me on Twitter at twitter.com/KyleSwagger. And, of course, here on the Bagel Tech Network with Bagel Tech Media, which I have to say thanks to everybody, all the new subscribers, because you told me that Media made 38 new subscribers on iTunes last week. So
No. The list of new subscribers, Bagel Tech Media was 38th in the list. So
38.
Out of all of the Tech News podcasts. So, yeah, very good.
Ah, thank you. Well, thank you very much.
You can get a hold of me on at Ewan Rankin on Twitter as well. And if you're following me on Bagel Tech News, you might want to start following me on at Ewan Rankin, because I'm going to start using the Bagel Tech News one a bit more for the corporate end of stuff and pushing out stories and that kind of thing. The personal witterings are going to go more on to Ewan Rankin as people transfer over. So if you're following Bagel Tech, fine.
Just
all the drunken stuff's going to go out on Ewan Rankin instead of Bagel Tech News, because I could do a lot of harm otherwise. We'll see you next week. Thanks ever so much for coming along. I hope you have a great weekend. We'll be back again next week on the 15th. The panel will be full to overflowing yet again. Mr. Anatko is coming back, so he'll be on offering his mirth. Will should be back as well. As Don, you're available still, aren't you?
Yep, sure, I'll be there.
And you two boys are available as well.
Yeah, I'll be in Glasgow. From sunny Glasgow next week.
A lay-by in Glasgow.
Yeah.
There's a lot of stories I know about lay-bys in Glasgow, but they're all going to stay in my head.
I'll check them all out for you. I'll let you know.
No, that's not a good thing to do, Jack. When you're up there, if you say I've checked out most of the lay-bys in Glasgow, mate, that's where reputations start and end. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week. Bye.